Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Spence Hackney, who is the president of Proclaim Interactive, which is an award-winning strategic marketing agency based in Carolina Beach in North Carolina. Today, we're going to be discussing Spence's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Spence.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
Awesome. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
That's easy. It's just the people. We say make it better a lot around our office. It's sort of become our de facto vision statement or simplified version of it. And what we mean by that is our work is about making people better, you know, and the people, our clients that run these businesses, our staff, our vendors, and that's probably a pivot that happened about a decade ago. And man, just the level of meaning we've gotten from reorienting around people has been incredible. Yeah.
That's really interesting. So you just want to always be making that positive impact, making people better. And that really brings fulfillment and meaning to your life.
Sure. As an entrepreneur. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying we always do it well, but that's always the goal.
That's the goal.
That's what the heartbreaking thing is. You're still going to break some stuff, no matter how well you try to behave.
Yep. It goes with the territory for sure.
Yeah.
So how did you originally get into digital marketing?
Oh, because I couldn't do anything else. No. So went to school in Chapel Hill, and this was a long time ago, and took a journalism class, and they showed us a website. And I was fascinated, so I went to work for GTE, which became Verizon. So they were the closest thing we had to a tech company at the time.
Okay.
And I lasted about a year in corporate life. It just wasn't for me. So I got out, and I started saying, I literally went around, knocked on people's doors, and said, "Hey, can we build you a website?" And they went. Cool. And their next question is, "What is a website? And why would I need one of these things?" So about 100 doors later, somebody said, "Sure, why not?" And we spent about the first 8 or 10 years as pretty much a web company. Mm-hmm. And then people kept coming to us going, "Hey, how do we get listed higher up in Yahoo and Alta Vista at the time? And then Google, and so we started to figure that out. And today we're a marketing company that does websites if we need to, mm-hmm. That's what the transition most people did as well.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. So interesting to see that how it's evolved, to start, it was just, small business owners were like, "I just need a website. That's fine." And now really websites and SEO, you can't separate the two. They're equally as important.
Yeah.
What was that deciding factor to really start your own agency, and what did it look like in the early days?
I would say it looked like desperation. It was how do you make rent? And this is the thing I know to do, because I am not cut out to work for a corporation. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing that motivates you like being hungry, when you first start. And mm-hmm. I had a young wife, no kid yet, but, and it was, if I can't find somebody to let me work for them, we don't make rent. It was that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that was super motivating at the time. That lasted a year. And then I actually had a company that bought my agency after a year. this was when the dot-com bubble was nuts. And a company bought us, and I worked for them for like a year. And then I started back a second time. And I just had real defined ideas about how you treat people in this thing and what kind of work you do, and a pretty firm moral code about it. And I felt like if I'm not in a control of the whole delivery, I can't make sure I keep my promises to the clients. And so it was really frustrating for me in both jobs I had that weren't kind of work for myself to go to a client and say, yes, we're going to do these things, and then go back to the client a month later and try to explain them why it didn't happen like that. And I didn't want to do that anymore. And so that's why I ended up in this agency life, because at least I'm in control of trying to meet those promises to the best of my ability. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then, so how did you get those first few clients when you were first starting out?
I'd say brute force. And I don't think this will work today. I mean, we literally went to office parks and knocked on doors. I did. I mean, I found a guy that was a screen printer, and I went in and helped fix his Windows 95 PC in exchange for him screen printing me some shirts. So I looked like a real business. And then just knocked on doors in office parks. It was stupid. Like, it was just terrible.
Yeah.
But then once we did that, we started to get referrals, you know, so the referrals happened pretty quickly and strongly. And I'll tell you, that's been in 20 years. That's been what drove us. It's just do good work for one client. They'll tell you about three or four others.
That's so cool.
We kind of ask for referrals occasionally, you know, just like we do some work for hospices now, and we'll say, you know, what other hospices do you know in your network that will benefit from this stuff? And they, if you do good work, they're pretty happy to share you around.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. I love learning about how people got their start, because it can definitely be so challenging in those early days, but it can almost, you know, it's inspiring just hearing that story about, you know, you work so hard, but your efforts pay off down the road. It was all worth it.
Yeah. Some days it's all worth it. Other days it's just, you know,
Good. Awesome. So how do you guys differentiate yourselves from other agencies?
That's a good question too. You know, and that is, I've kind of seen there's two ways to go about this. One is you sort of niche down into something so fine that, you're almost the only logical choice, you know, and to what degree do you do that? And I would say we probably were that at one point in healthcare. Like we were pretty focused on that niche. We had about probably in our market, we had every major specialty as a client, you know? And so you kind of saturate your local market, and maybe that was 75% of our business, but today that's not the case. And that was a little bit of a personal choice of just wanting some diversity of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And so today we looked for clients who were really needing some thought leadership in how they're marketing. And so these are not clients who are just looking for a service provider. You know, so people that call us saying, I just need somebody to do SEO and here's my specs. Or I need a, you know, just a website or something. That's really not us. Our clients typically come to us saying, hey, I've got this functional business problem, you know, help us fix this kind of functional acquisition problem. And so we're a little bit selective. I mean, I'm not saying we're elitist, but we really try to stay focused on those clients. And the industry wise, we do a fair amount of kind of B2B, some in the industrials, seems to be where a lot of our work has gravitated. But we still do a fair amount of healthcare, still probably half of our, maybe 40% to half of our business is healthcare.
Interesting. So you're looking to build that long-term relationship and really help take that business, help them to grow and take themselves to the next level instead of working on like a per project basis.
Yeah. We don't do project. Everything we have is recurring retainer. We don't call them retainers, but it's kind of that. And probably we've got one client that's hitting the 20-year mark, but we've got a couple others that are over 10 years. And so most of our clients are pretty long-term relationships too. Definitely.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you just have a completely different working relationship with someone you've been working with that long. You know, they're almost like a friend, I can imagine, at that point.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like the one client that's been there 20 years, we've had four principals we've worked with, one of which we went to a funeral, you know, 10 years. And so wow. It's been incredible. And the one that just left, we just got a call from him this week to come and help him out where he's at now. You know, so it's, those are sort of the relationships that we really enjoy and found fulfilling, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What, how do you nurture those relationships and really help foster that long-term working relationship?
Yeah, that's great. You know, it kind of revolves around keeping promises. And when you can't keep the promises, you're transparent on why. And so transparency is one of our core values, and a little bit of an odd one. Like you don't see that very often, mm-hmm. but I found like being a little vulnerable with your client is pretty key to that. And, you know, just an example during COVID, you know, in healthcare, we had clients furloughing staff. And so we forgave profit for a period of time during COVID, meaning that we kind of marked their bills down by our profit margin just and kind of worked for free to keep the lights on. And then we did not do a price increase on our healthcare clients during COVID that everybody else was kind of getting. And because they were transparent with us, they were saying like, we're suffering in this, you know, here's what's going on. And we were trying to work with staffing strategies and communication. We, you know, these great huge pivots. But then now, like I just talked to my clients and I was like, I really hate to do this. We're talking about a 40% service increase. And they were grateful, you know, but when I spoke with them, I'm transparent. I'm like, look, our labor costs, you know, we had two raises this year. Your scope is great, you know, and they don't have any issue with that because we've got a transparent relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key, you know, and keeping promises is tough. I mean, when you get to a certain size, sort of mistakes will be made. I don't care how good your SOPs are, you know, like somebody's going to mess up a comment on social media and a misspelling will happen. And I always hate those and we try to prevent them, but I think that transparency does help cover some of those times when promises are broken and we broken our share. I mean, we're not perfect in this.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting. So just always being open up front about things and it just really helps nurture that relationship and build that trust at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. So I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about sales. So what does your sales strategy look like? You know, how are you bringing leads into your agency? And then how do you close those prospects?
Yeah, I'd say that we've changed that a bit to be forthright. Is our, probably 5 or 6 years ago, we had a little smaller client. We have 30% less clients today than we did 5 years ago because we pivoted kind of larger, more strategic ones. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we used to use kind of the same content strategy, lead funnel sort of stuff you see a lot. Today, it's highly relational. You know, it really is you know, hey, Dan, we've worked together a while. We're kind of interested in doing work for these guys over here. Can you introduce us? You know, it's way more like that than it is in the past, to the point where I am the sales guy now, you know, because you know, I'm in a group called C12, which is like a Christian business owner group. And one of the things they have, which I really like, is this really simple graphic about the 10 roles of CEO. And it's super helpful because most of running something is figuring out what not to do. You know? But one of the things on that list is sell to your best clients. And about a year ago, I realized probably every client we're bringing on now is our best client. You know, because they're going to represent a pretty significant portion of your revenue. And we don't bring on a lot now. You know, we're down to like 90 clients versus 130 or 40. And
interesting.
I'd have to look at the numbers exactly. So it's a little easier for me to do that process. I have help. You know, I'm really the person who talks to them, but other people help me put the materials together. So.
Okay. Interesting. So now you're looking at that quality over quantity when you're looking at bringing on new clients.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, interesting. And then, so you're the one who primarily does like the sales. Is that how that works?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Are there any, you know, common objections that, that crop up that you've noticed?
Yeah. So we have a pretty unique, somewhat unique offering in that we don't make any prescriptions or promises up front, right? And so what we're really saying is, here's a process. It starts with brand strategy and messaging. There's a discovery piece. There'll be some assets we need to build out. We think it might be these assets. And then we don't really know, but there's this quiver of marketing tactics we may use. And here's the quiver. And then we talk about what's a reasonable amount for you to invest in acquiring new clients each month. And so really what we end up talking about is their business. Like what makes sense from a business perspective to invest in growth? How fast do you want to grow? What problems do you have you're having to overcome? Are you penetrating your market? Or are you trying to stimulate demand? Kind of, because that would change from 5% top line to 15% top line on what you're spending on marketing.
Yeah.
And so once we arrive at that number, then we sign the contract and sort of get started. And so that in itself does require a level of trust, right? For somebody to say, I'm going to give you this portion of my top line, trusting that you're going to do something with it that's going to help my business, you know, 5 months from now. Because all marketing does is just buy future business, right? That's what you're doing when you pay for marketing.
Yes.
You're not really buying present business. You're buying some future return.
Yeah.
In almost every case. Not, maybe not every case, but and so that trust is critical. So the objection you have to overcome is, how do I know that you'll invest my money wisely? Right. It's kind of the same objection that you have if you're somebody's financial planner. You know, it's how do I know that you're going to pick good stocks for me?
Hmm.
And yeah, and that is where, you know, we do some things to build trust. And a lot of it is, hey, I want you to talk to these five clients. I'll take you out to lunch with one of these clients. I'll, you know, hear what this guy who's been with us 4 years would say, because that's a way more powerful, I think, than any sort of stat I could quote you, because nobody trusts statistics anyway today. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can
yeah.
say whatever percentage you want. But I'd say it's a trust question, really, is the biggest objection.
Okay. And so how do you build trust quickly with a new client?
Yeah, I mean, it helps if they do have a connection with one of your existing clients that you can kind of play off of.
Yeah.
So a lot of our clients are connected with another client. That's helpful. I think a lot of times, if you're in their industry, like we do a lot of industry specific things, even if they don't know each other, you can show them, you know, you know where this company was 5 years ago, right? Let's look at them, look at where they are today. Maybe not all of that's attributed to us. You never be that arrogant, but we had a hand in that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's now compare your growth to that one. And let's see if you like to go on that path. That's super helpful. Yeah, and some of it's just personal. Like, I'm still a believer that being in the same room with somebody makes a difference. And so,
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to Cleveland. I don't travel a lot, but I'm going to Cleveland next week. So I want to be in front of somebody when I talk to them. And yeah, and I still value that. Some people would argue with that today, but
it's definitely, yeah, ever since the pandemic hit, it's definitely changed things a lot. But yeah, definitely having that face-to-face interaction is super powerful.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. So yeah, I think we've actually, you know, like, so what are your general overall tips for maintaining happy clients?
Okay. You know, we hit the transparency thing.
Yeah.
So whatever you do, don't even appear like you're hiding something.
Yep.
I've become more of a believer in trying to align the personality of the account manager with the personality of the principal at the client side.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And there's just, we do something called Right Path, which is like a kind of a behavioral assessment. I think it's like 10 times better than Myers-Briggs or something like that. But it does give you a snapshot into how somebody behaves. And of course, we can't do that on our clients. We're not testing them, but you sort of have a guess of who the client is. And we do try to line those up, and even just similar kind of age and stage. You know, if the client is a lady that has her kids out of the house, it might be better to align them with an account manager who's dealing with the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because your account manager and the client need to have a pretty close personal relationship. Like, they're going to be working together often.
Yep.
And there is a little bit of sexism that plays into it sometimes with clients. I mean, I've run into that where just there's some guys who just won't respect a certain girl, and that's frustrating to me. But I fired a client over that. I'll be straight about that too. You know that. And so you kind of got to deal with some of that stuff. We do some reporting that we think is really helpful, meaning that a lot of clients, when they think of reporting or agencies, you think of, let me kind of export something out of Google Analytics or Data Studio, and you know, the report out of my social media software, and the report out of SEO Moz or whatever you're using. Let me email that all the clients and say, here's how your campaigns are doing. Right. And that, I think there's nothing that frustrates clients any more than that. I mean, they just think it's useless. So we do this insight-based reporting where we have a paid position that just looks at all the data and says, here's what you should believe based on the data. Here's the truth out of the data. And then we sit down with them every quarter, and it's, you know, the relationship manager, the account manager, sometimes the marketing director and the client, and say, here's what we're seeing in truth. What do you think of this? And what are you seeing in truth in your business? And how do we pivot? And those quarterly sort of insight reviews or truth reviews are super important. And they're way past like emailing somebody a report. That is just something we really try not to do.
Okay. Yeah. So instead of, you know, just sending them off a report, letting them kind of decode that on their own, you basically simplify that for them, hop on a call, explain what this all means, and then, you know, find out if they have any questions.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good approach. And I think that's really smart also, matching the personalities of your client to the account manager. I think that makes so much sense, because at the end of the day, if you're going to be working closely, you want to make sure that the two get along well and have similar working styles.
Yeah. And that, I'll be straight, we probably hit about 75% of the time. You know, there's other considerations. It's like, if this client does 8 other medical specialties in the, you know, that vertical, it makes sense for her to do this one too. You know, there's some of that. And so you don't always get to choose, but we try.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing your agency?
People. I heard somebody say one time, business would be easy if it wasn't for people, which is true. And so it's getting the right people in your agency. Like, our culture's pretty strong. I don't think it's as strong as it was pre-COVID, to be frank, because of the impact of virtual, but still pretty strong. And so it's been a challenge to find people who believe what we believe and behave like we behave, and also know the things we need them to know. Right. Those are rare. And so we'll look at, you know, maybe 100 resumes to get 4 people we're interested in, to bring 2 in for an interview, and then about half the time don't hire that person, you know? Wow. So it limits your growth. You know, when you hire like that, clients a little bit the same way. You know, I think you kind of interview clients kind of like you interview staff, you know, and you try to find out their cultural fit, if you can't communicate well, you know. And about 20% of the time we get in there and we're like, this is just not what we expected. The picture, I mean, right now we're dealing with a client who, when we got in there, the goal was generate leads, which is great. And then to our first question is, do you have a CRM? Oh yeah. Well, after about 18 months, I'm pretty convinced they don't have a CRM, you know, because what we're getting is like an export out of QuickBooks, and they're a big company, you know, they're, you know, 600 employees, something like that. And that happens sometimes. It's really hard to know what's really going on inside of a client until you dig in there. I haven't solved that yet either. So those are the hardest things, I think, the people on the client side and the people on the employee side.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that can definitely be frustrating too when you're trying to do your due diligence, make sure they're a good fit. They have, you know, for example, the CRM, and then, yeah, they're just not necessarily being as forthcoming as you would like.
But
I think that just goes with the territory sometimes.
Yeah. I think a lot of the success though is getting incrementally better at that. You know, it's sort of reduce your strikeout percentage as much as you can. So if you're striking out 3 out of 4 times, it's going to be tough. If you're striking out 1 out of 4 at bats, you're probably going to do pretty well, but you're never going to bat 1,000. You know, like you're never going to hit them all.
Yeah. Like what questions can I be asking next time to make sure that they are being honest when I'm asking them questions?
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but do you have any, you know, final words of wisdom or just anything that you would like to share with our listeners that you think would be beneficial?
And this is for somebody who is a current agency owner. It's sort of your thinking. I can say a few things I've learned recently. How about that? Will that work?
Absolutely. I
have come to believe that bigger is not always better. More profoundly, there's a book called Small Giants that I would recommend if you're wondering, do we need to grow or not? And there's reasons you ought to grow. I think they're not always the right reasons. You know, I think, you know, top line is a vanity metric. You know, saying how many $1 million of an agency are you is completely irrelevant. You know, profit is what gives you sanity. Profit is what lets you sleep at night. You know, but in the end, you've got to have cash flow to run the thing. And so sometimes those don't have a bearing on size as we think of it about. So that's something to think about. I would, I'd also challenge a little bit of conventional wisdom that you've got to niche down incredibly fine to be successful. Right. So I think that's probably a more marketable agency if you're desirous to sell it, if it's niche down, but it may not be one that's the most life-giving for you and your staff. Right. And so if you're trying to flip out of the agency quick and sell it, niche down, have a buyer in mind when you niche down, and people want to do that. That's great. But maybe you need to think about kind of what your long-term is on this thing before you make decisions. And a lot of this is coming on my own life right now, you know, what I've been thinking of. And then I'd say the final thing is, I've watched other agency owners, because it can be a very high pressure job. You know, there's a lot asked of you, a lot of demands. Like I've got 96 bosses, whatever that number comes out to be, not one. You know, you're always trying to please 100 clients or 50 clients or whatever it is. Yeah. And that can be a challenge. And so I would say you're going to really regret it if you win at that and lose with your family. You know, and so if you do well with that and you don't know your kids and your wife's not happy with you, it's a bad trade. Go and work at Home Depot and live in a smaller house, you know, by all means.
Yeah, get your priorities straight. You know, it's definitely, you're going to have to make some sacrifices as an entrepreneur, I think. But definitely, you know, not sacrificing the time with your children and your wife, as you said, because I think that's something that, you know, you'll regret. You know, you don't want to, you know, get to the end of your life, look back and regret something. So, yes. All right. Well, those were really great tips and recommendations. So next we're going to move on to the Fast Five, which are 5 rapid fire questions. What's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I've got to say the Bible is, of course, the most profoundly impact on my life. And then probably a book on Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, because it was super foundational to my faith. And I would say if there's any reason I've been at least outwardly successful in life, it's because of that. But it's also the reason I kind of inwardly at peace and happy is because of that. So,
Awesome. I love it. And what does your morning routine look like?
Well, I'm in my summertime mode right now, which doesn't look always. So I don't set my alarm in the morning. And we get up at sunrise when the kid wakes us up, which is maybe six. If it's a good day, I might swim. We're fortunate to live a place I can jump in the water and swim for a bit. But that doesn't always happen. Like, so I'm not super disciplined with working out. Get a cup of coffee, read my Bible outside for maybe 30, 45 minutes. I'm using the office 8:30, something like that.
Okay, yeah. Very good. That's awesome. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I like Patrick Lencioni. Not, I guess he is a CEO, but he's really more of a thinker. He's got a podcast called At the Table that I love. Lots that he's written, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And then maybe kind of more true CEO is probably Marcus Lemonis. He has this idea, the three P's, people, process, and profit. And what I like about that guy is he seems to have business in perspective. Like, he really does seem to think about the people first. And
yeah,
he had a TV show at one point. I don't think he still does. But I also love what he did with he bought Camping World and kind of turned it around and some other things. So I admire the guy a bit too.
That's cool. That's awesome. And what is your favorite online tool?
Oh, I'm super boring. I'm just in G Suite all day. Like, it's pretty much just Gmail and text and iMessage. We have Maven Link, which is a project management system, but that's where I live. So
yeah. No, the G Suite really is so convenient. It's I just love how everything just works so well together, you know, when you're in Google Docs and Sheets and Gmail. And they've also got all the extensions. So yeah, it's definitely a very useful tool.
Totally.
And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I've sort of got two, they're linked. One is that I think what you do is far less important than how you do it and how you treat people. I think I spent way too much time trying to figure out what it is I'm made to do, when I should have just thought a lot more about how am I going to do the thing when I get there. Along with that your self-worth and your identity isn't tied to your job or how much money you make, you know, that's separate from that. And that's strongly informed by my faith. I mean, that is kind of the message of Christianity, but it took me a while to really learn that in a practical level. I'd say until I was probably 35. You know, before I really, really caught on to that.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Spence. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, Julie, nice to meet you too.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.